Yay! How do you feel?
I mean, it just seems fine.
Seems fine.
Seems fine. Yeah. No problem.
Yeah, I mean, like, thanks for coming and doing it. I really do appreciate it.
That's okay.
And to introduce to anyone listening, anyone who I desperately hope is listening.
Yeah. I'm hopeful also.
Yeah. Yeah. Today's guest is Danny Chalmers. You prefer Danny or Danielle?
I don't care anymore.
Don't give a shit.
Nope. Whatever you want to call me.
I just remember when Pat was like, Danny, it's Danny. You're like, it's just how people know you.
It is just how people know me, and predominantly,
awesome. And you used to work for the Premier Australian hardcore punk label.
Yeah, Resist Records.
Resist Records,
for 10 whole years.
Yeah, what years were you there for?
So I started in 2005. I was still in high school.
2 decades ago. How does that make you feel?
I mean, it feels like not that long ago, but also it feels like a whole lifetime ago.
Yeah.
So 2005 to 2015. Mm-hmm. And then I say 2015 was the year that I quit hardcore entirely.
Yeah.
I quit the job.
Burned it to
the
ground.
I quit the music and I was like, you're all dead to me.
Yeah, right. I wouldn't phrase it that way, but it is kind of how I feel. And like, I talked about this, like, Bianca, my fiance, and I, we did a top 10 episode just for, like, instead of doing like a year in the history of hardcore, we just did a wrap up for 2023.
Nice.
And I forced her to listen to like my favorite records, and it was
cute.
It was cute.
Cute.
But yeah, I kind of said the same thing to her, like, because all these new bands that I actually really like, but like, I was almost like deliberately ignorant of new. I didn't want to be a part of hardcore anymore, and I don't even feel hostile towards it. I was just like, oh, this is dumb or something.
I think, you know, when I phrased it and said you're all dead to me, that's a bit harsh. But
I understand it. Yeah.
So when I quit Resist Records, I actually just stopped listening to any type of music entirely for about 2 years. Like, there was no music, hardcore or otherwise.
Do you listen to the radio or anything, like Triple J?
I didn't, but then I started, and that's how I started to like music again.
You got rehabilitated.
And I was like, I love Triple J. I'm a normie now. Yeah. What summer festival can I go to?
Yeah.
Like,
nice. you got laneway pills. Like.
Yeah. I didn't go to any festivals though. So I feel like for me, I just got really burnt out. Yeah. Like really, really burnt out.
Well, yeah, I guess for a lot of people, people who are in bands, like, I don't think for punk bands, they don't see it as a job.
No.
Like, maybe once you get to like Parkway Drive's level or Anime Afflictions level, then it's a job. I understand that. Like, like, you're paying the bills. But in the local scene, like, even a band like Speed, who are super popular now and like sell heaps of tickets, I don't think those guys would view it as...
It wouldn't be a job level yet.
It's a social scene.
Yeah.
And it's creativity and it's art and stuff. But for you,
it wasn't just my job.
It was your world, because it was your social scene as well, right?
Yeah.
It's like this is what comedy is like for me. It's like you just got to get away from it sometimes.
Yeah, because it was kind of like, if that was the only people that I knew, in a way it was good because you could go anywhere in the world and you would know people. You would have,
I do love that.
You know, friends, family, whatever.
Yeah.
So in a way it was like really positive. I met like a lot of great people. Mm-hmm. I'm friends with some of them still.
Yeah.
But I feel like... Yeah, the fact that, you know, for majority, people didn't actually take me seriously.
Right.
It started to feel like certain people would just be using me for, like, where I worked.
Right.
And it became...
What do you mean certain people? Like, you mean friendships or do you mean, like, relationships or, like...
I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It got to a point of, like, questionable because once I stopped being as involved or like didn't have that job,
people dropped off.
Everyone just kind of dropped off. I'm sure there was like other factors, but it was a big one.
Yeah.
And I think also I started to, like, I got into hardcore and wanted to work in it for a certain reason. There was messages, there was like meaning behind it.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. Yes.
And as I got towards the end, I was like, this is just a bros club for dudes that want to pretend they feel some feelings or have meaning behind things. But nobody actually cares.
And this was like the 2010s when you kind of got
disillusioned. Yeah. So from 2013 onwards, because I think that was around the time where a lot of like Australian controversial things would happen. Like a lot of dudes in bands were getting called out about questionable behavior.
Yeah, sexual misconduct and stuff like
sexual
that.
Sexual misconduct. Yeah. There was...
Well, I remember there was that... Oh, was that that Byron Bay guy or something? Oh, he was like a tour manager.
Just a lot of people.
Yeah, name one, I guess.
There was, you know, smaller bands were putting out film clips depicting like violence against women.
Do you remember that?
Laura Jane Grace came out.
Yeah.
And there was all these conversations that I was saying... we should be a part of, or we should speak up against things, or, you know, it would be wrong not to have an opinion in something that we're like, we're some of the main players in the scene of. And I was just kind of told it's not our business.
And now in 2024, that's like, you know, that's the mainstream of punk. It's like, trans rights, anti-racism, like all this sort of stuff. And also like in the 80s, which we're going to get to in a minute, that was also the mainstream of punk.
And like, that was the whole thing for me. I was like, do you guys not know where this all started? Yeah, like this is about this. Yeah. You know, it is.
Because even like, Caputo, I've forgotten her first name. Was it?
Lena? Caputo?
Lena Caputo? Was that Vision of Disorder?
So it's...
An old band.
It's been forever.
It's been forever. And trans people have been in fucking punk for literally forever. Yeah. So, I mean, just talking about Laura Jane Grace, but...
But yeah, so that was around... Yeah. Everything was just happening.
Well, I also remember, like, I don't want to put anyone on blast, but I remember, like, there weren't very many Indigenous people in hardcore.
No.
And I remember... one guy who's like a very famous artist and very successful now, he had like his friends in Byron Bay just had a nickname for him.
Mm.
And like, I don't feel sensitive because it wasn't fucking me saying it. They just called him Abbo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was just like, and he thought it was funny at the time, I guess. I don't know if he'd look back and laugh at it now, but I was just like, okay.
I think
like you have right to reply. I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong, but I was like, that's fucked, like in my head.
Yeah, I feel like, and there's probably still an undercurrent, but in a different way. I don't think anything ever really goes away.
Yeah.
I'd like to hope it does. Like I'm hopeful that things have changed and it truly is a lot more inclusive and accepting.
Yeah.
But I still think back then it just was very easy to go along with, well, this is fine. This is fine. It's a joke.
Yeah, I think that was a big part in that sort of like that era where it was I Killed the Prom Queen and Carpe Diem and stuff like that. It was like very boring. And it was like, I guess you could say it was like all irony, but like...
How far?
How like, far?
How far is too far?
What are you presenting to people who are like 17 coming to your shows when you're like...
Yeah.
Oh, this... Yeah, yeah. I can't... Yeah, I don't want to get too bogged down, but I think Australia is just... You'll find it in any sort of like smaller subculture scene. It's just like so parochial and it's just so like you got the big dogs, like big fish in a little pond sort of thing. And they get to say that being a crass idiot is actually cool. And it's like, okay, well, I guess that's what our scene is now. Well, and then American bands will come over and they'll be, oh, American Comics. This happened recently. American Comic came over and it was like, this is fucked. Like, what are you guys doing? Like,
I feel like even recently at the Drug Church show, Pat came up to me and like, we know each other, we're friends.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, hey, I have to ask you a question. What is wrong with Australians and this racism?
Oh, shit.
And
really?
I was like, yeah.
Because he's living in Perth now, right?
He lives in Perth. Yeah. And he was just like, he's like, I know we got stuff at home, but like,
Perth is a big mining town.
He's
as
like,
well,
you
though,
guys you know? Are like,
we are.
I was like, yeah, yeah. I don't have any answers for you. Sorry.
Yeah, it's wild. I think Australia and Britain is kind of similar. Where you have maybe America as well, but America is just so much bigger. But like in Australia and Britain, you have this really clear delineation in terms of the media, and you have like the right-wing media and the left-wing media, and that's just like how it works.
Yeah.
So I think, not to say that there isn't any racism, but like these two sides really play off one another and kind of use it as currency as well, which just I think makes things worse because they're not actually offering any solutions to... Like, I read this whole thing because my friend hosted the ABC New Year's fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
And Daily Mail just had this whole thing about, like, how it's politicized and talking about, like, the voice department referendum, all that sort of stuff. And I'm like, that was months ago and you're still trying to, like, drag up your, like, just your readership into this kind of, like, culture war.
Yeah.
Which is, it is, I don't want to say it's fake, but it's, like, definitely constructed. You know, it's all very, like...
There's a lot.
Yeah. So, and I think, yeah, so that's like, if you think of that as like the mainstream culture, that stuff does just filter down
it just
into subcultures.
Down.
Like, we want to think that we're like, we're against the grain or whatever, but like, we just reiterate the same.
Yeah. And also, within a smaller community. Even if we've found that community, where do we come from?
Exactly.
Like, what is our.
You can't just join it and then not like reflect or like do a self audit on your past behavior. Like,
yeah.
Like, you really got to constantly be like, because, yeah, again, like talking about Laura Jane Grace, talking about when trans rights and sort of identities came to the forefront in the early 20-teens, like I remember having conversations with dudes in punk bands and like this one guy, he was like, no, if you've got a dick, you're a dude. And if you've got a pussy, you're a woman. I'm like, and I'm just trying to be like,
what?
It always made sense to me
when
people talk about it being a sense of identity. I'm like, your parts have nothing to do with it. Just if your arm gets chopped off, it doesn't mean that you never had an arm.
Yeah.
Like you can be still be like, I see myself as an arm. Like talking about your physical body and then your
identity.
Internal being. Like your soul. Essentially as your soul.
Yeah.
Like it's like pretty heartless to just like completely disregard that.
Yeah, I just
And this is early days. So like I am willing to forgive people for like
I think everyone
especially if they're kids.
Everyone has a room to grow and to learn and to change. And I think it would actually be super close-minded to think that they can't.
Exactly.
Because I would like to think
that
people feel the same way. You know, I would like to hope that I've grown and changed, and if not, that's like super worrying.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like, I have to afford everybody else that same grace.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. Like, do you think people in the hardcore scene don't? This is how I feel. I feel like looking back, this was a definite not. I'm not speaking in absolutes, but there was definitely this stream of thinking where it's like, oh, if you say one thing or if you present yourself as one thing, that's you forever.
Yeah, kind of.
And that's kind of what was very limiting about the scene. As much as like there's so many good things. I got so much out of being in bands and all that sort of stuff. But there is this sort of thing where it's like, oh, you are this. And we have you've labeled yourself as this. And then we are.
Therefore, you are it forever.
That's it.
Because were you straight edge for a little bit?
I was straight
bit?
Edge for a long time.
Yeah.
I was straight edge for a decade. Yeah.
And I feel like that's a thing that people that aren't themselves, like other people take personally. If you're like, I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah, sure.
Or like, this, I don't resonate with this. Like, I think even Graham that ran Resist, my favorite thing was he had never drunk ever.
Yeah.
Like he said he'd had one glass of champagne in his entire life.
Yeah.
But he was like, why would I call myself straight edge? I don't need a label or be in, you know, there was all those straight edge gangs. He's
Totally.
I don't need to be in a straight edge gang or be
in
a crew or like X up
to
know that's my values as a person.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. And it's also like, I guess the reason I was straight edge, like I sort of count myself part of that subculture is because it is a reaction to having drunk and having been a part, especially in Australia.
Mm.
And if you just grew up never drinking, then it's sort of like, well, I don't.
Yeah.
I was already doing this.
Because you were kind of like, you see it as an act of rebellion.
A little bit,
it's like something to push
against.
That's
the value, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think that's good context. that's like a big reason why I wanted you on today. Because like today, I want to talk about like what I think is like, if a comedian came, all these fucking comedians, they come on, they're like, oh, what's the difference between punk and hardcore? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, it doesn't matter. Who cares? But if someone was like, give me one album to listen to understand hardcore, I would give them this album.
Mm.
So this album came out in 1989. It ended the first decade of hardcore. Like we're going year by year. This is the last one for the 80s. Start Today by Gorilla Biscuits.
What a banger.
This is the one.
It is like...
I think this is the one.
I think it is. And honestly, this may sound stupid, but I'm like, obviously they've got no other album to compare. Like, yeah, well, yeah, true, you know, yeah. I'm like, this is the only, yeah. this is the only album. But
so many of the bands from the 80s, they existed for 3 years. They recorded one full length. Mm. And then there's always all these certain sects of like hardcore kids who are like, oh, it's Youth of Today. Or it's like, it's this band, it's that band, it's whatever. But I think Gorilla Biscuits really branched out.
I was like, it's Gorilla Biscuits.
It's like the umbrella that they put up like covers so many different styles of music.
Yeah.
But also so many different types of hardcore kid as well.
Yeah.
Like you had the tough guys, you had the little nerds.
It
you
had a like bit for everyone.
The punk kids who came over to like, yeah. Yeah, the scene. Yeah.
And I think that's something that, you know, listening back to the album,
yeah.
I was like, there's so many songs on it, but everything is inclusive to someone. And I was re-listening, yeah. rereading, and I was like, this album actually was just like, let's get over our shit. What are we doing?
I'm glad you said, like, I was about going to say the exact
they
same thing.
They literally were like, let's start today.
Yeah, yeah. That it does. It feels good. Like, it felt good listening to it.
Oh, every time. I don't think I've ever listened to it and like thought, oh, why am I doing this to myself?
And I mean, I know like, okay, so let's not get ahead of ourselves. Okay. Let's start at the beginning.
All right.
So basically, there's not a lot of info on... There's some old like interviews from zines, but there's no real like write-ups about the history of this album.
Yeah.
It's sort of like every website, every review just says one of the most influential bands in hardcore.
Yeah.
Every single website says that. And I'm like, okay, so like are there examples? Are there like like who did they influence? And it's just like...
Everyone. Every single person found something to use.
So just like as a bit of background on the band, I have a quote from Tom Breehan from Stereo Gum. Gorilla Biscuits, they were part of a wave of young bands in New York hardcore. This is in the late 80s. Those bands could be tough, but they weren't outright scary as the forebears like Agnostic Front and Cro-Mags.
Yeah.
Both of whom we've covered on this. Yeah. Yeah. Like just like...
Lovely people.
You've met these people?
Yeah, so we toured Agnostic Front
yeah.
When I worked at Resist.
I fucking love Agnostic Front. I think that's so good.
You know, like, I think the other thing is, like, for majority of people, lovely people, but can be scary dudes if they need to be.
Well, they grew up in spots.
Yeah.
In New York in the 80s.
They had to.
You had to be scary. They were rightfully scary.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you had Cro-Mags who are scary just because, like, in all honesty, like, hey, they're not here to punch me in the face. They're pretty dumb, dude. Cro-Mags seem like fucking idiots. I'm sorry.
I love that I had this moment. I was like, that's John Joseph, right?
Yeah,
like,
John. Yeah.
I was like, that guy. That guy. Yeah.
Yeah, mainly John Joseph and Harley Flanagan. Like, on the episode, we're just like, this is a hardcore band. Like, dudes who got into New York hardcore, like living in squats, like fights at CBGB's, toughest fucking band maybe ever. And they're having a decades long petty fight about IP law.
Mm.
I just think that's the funniest thing in the world. Just like the toughest dudes you ever know. Just be like, I own the name Cro-Mag. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
look, they just couldn't get past something.
So they weren't as scary as those bands, but they were aggressive. Like, the album is still aggressive. It's still like a dude kind of working through his shit. But with a bit of constructivity to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what the rest of this quote is just says, Gorilla Biscuits played with a giddy, explosive sense of melody. Their songs were tight and focused and extremely catchy.
I couldn't agree more. Like, they're almost like the pop band of hardcore.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to say that?
Like, well, I think I was going to ask you this. Like, I think there's a lot. I don't think. So Fall Out Boy, they covered Start Today.
Yeah.
For a Tony Hawk.
I've got it in my notes. That would have been the first time I ever heard Gorilla Biscuits.
Yeah.
It was the American Wasteland Tony Hawk soundtrack.
Yep. There you go.
And a bunch of bands covered like...
Old hardcore.
Yeah. And that's how I learned a lot of hardcore songs.
Yeah. So I think there's a certain... I know Fall Out Boy, they're all like old hardcore dudes.
Yeah. And,
crazy bands. But I do think there's this like stream of pop punk that wouldn't exist if... not for Gorilla Biscuits.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Gorilla Biscuits are like, by definition, a New York hardcore band, I think they just gave way to this certain style of pop punk that became pretty popular.
Well,
like, I don't think you'd have Newfound Glory without Gorilla Biscuits.
No. Because I think they kind of made it fun.
Yeah, they made being tough fun.
Yeah.
They did. And they made, yeah, they made like straight edge fun. They made all these sorts of classic ideals of hardcore. They made it like, yeah, these are important, but we don't have to be fucking so serious about it. Like,
I think also the thing that I find the funniest is like a lot of my favorite hardcore records are straight edge hardcore records.
Yeah, right.
And I have never been straight edge. But there's something to be said about straight edge bands that don't push it to the forefront of everything. So
yeah, totally.
Gorilla Biscuits, I think, covered a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
but made it still inclusive. Yeah, it wasn't definitely like you have to be this to like us,
yeah,
and be into us. They were like, we all have different opinions, but here's some facts about things, and
yeah,
I want you to know about it, yeah, so you can make a decision.
Here's some facts.
While we're having fun.
Yeah.
Go while vegan. You know, yeah, like.
Did you know that Start Today, at least at the time, it was the biggest selling record that Revelation had put out at that point?
I Googled it this morning. Yeah. I think it was like, was it 10 million copies or
something?
I don't
have the number. But
yeah.
I just have the,
and that's still today, apparently. Still
their biggest selling
record. Biggest selling release of all time.
They keep doing the reissues.
It was the first release they'd put on CD.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We Googled it.
We got our facts. Yeah, and like I honestly, this is just to give some context for people who have never heard them. And look, if you haven't heard them, get on Spotify, listen to the record, because it is a lot of fun. Yeah, in terms of their sound, there's a Thrasher interview with Walter, who was the guitarist. He just says, "We love the melodies of the Descendants, the optimism of 7 Seconds, and the pissed offness of Minor Threat, and the musicianship of Bad Brains."
Yeah.
And I think that makes perfect sense.
I can see all of that in there.
But I think what is also happening on this record is like it is that post Ag Front, post Cro-Mag sound as well.
Mm.
So like they have all these bands that they sort of grew up with that they're like, oh, I love Descendants, I love Minor Threat, and like that makes total fucking sense. But I think the locality, like just being in New York, growing up, going to these shows and seeing Cro-Mags, that adds this other element to the sound. Like they had this aggression, they had this like kind of,
yeah,
it's a really forceful record. Like,
yeah,
like there's parts in it that I'm like, oh, this is fucking tough, but it doesn't
sound feel
tough, it doesn't feel tough.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So yeah, Walter Schreifels
wrote the whole album.
He wrote the whole fucking, he wrote pretty much everything.
Look,
like, he wrote Siv's album as well in the 90s.
I feel like Walter has written pretty much most of the best albums.
He wrote, maybe not most of, but I know because he produced the Title Fight record,
yes,
Shed. And
yes.
I remember reading something like he definitely changed a few things around on those songs.
Yeah.
Which you can really hear from like Title Fight being a band that sounded almost exactly like Blink-182 to what they did on Shed. Like,
yeah,
it was pretty,
yeah.
So yeah, he wrote all the lyrics, which is really interesting to me because is it Anthony Civarelli or Arthur Civarelli?
It's Anthony, because I thought Arthur too. I don't
know. Arthur
Simeus. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So he's such a good front man. Like his voice, like the way he sings, the way he delivers his lyrics, it's like, yeah, fuck yeah. And then to learn that he didn't write those lyrics is really interesting.
I also read that he didn't actually want to be the front man.
Yeah, right.
And
so
when they first performed, he would like stand facing the back because he was like, I don't. And now you think about, you know, probably if you've seen them or if you've watched any clips of them, and it's so energetic and it's so engaging. You're like, you didn't want to do
this? Yeah, it's crazy. He's such the, and especially when like the band that came after Siv, which is, I guess, almost a pop punk band, right?
Would I don't you know. If
I, oh, you know? Have you never listened?
I
to
don't them? Know if I've ever listened to Siv.
You know that band, Set Your Goals?
Yes, I do.
So that's named after a Siv song.
Oh, yeah.
They were pretty big. They got on like MTV and
Siv.
Stuff like that. Siv, yeah.
Yeah, look.
But it was that 90s.
There's a lot of bands.
Yeah. What do they call it? The 90s major label feeding frenzy?
Because
it was Siv and then Quicksand. Both,
right.
Were both major labels.
Right. Yeah.
And Quicksand was Walter Schreifels' band. After
yes.
Gorilla, I'm just saying this for the list. I know you know this.
Oh no, I'm into sorry, it. I'm like, go the timeline. Go the timeline.
This is like, I've talked about it like in passing in other podcasts, but I'm like, all hardcore kids are autistic. They love timelines.
We love
timelines. They love collecting records. We love
Except
it. We love it.
I'm like a bad hardcore kid because I'm like, oh yeah, I think I know what this is, yeah, or yeah, it might have been this. I can't remember anything. Yeah. I enjoy it, but yeah, I'm like, it's in one ear, out the other.
It's
unfortunately,
tacit knowledge that just lives in like a weird cloud, yeah, in the back of our brain.
Sometimes like, it comes forward when I need it. Otherwise, in 2 weeks' time, I'll be like, oh yeah, and this happened too. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, to long story short, they all went on to like other important bands.
Yeah.
And, but like, yeah, it's just interesting because Walter wrote this whole album. He wrote, you know, he was writing Quicksand, which was like almost like a metal band, I guess, at the time.
Yeah.
Like it's post-hardcore, but like you look at the guitars they were playing and you look at like, like for the time, it was kind of like definitely metal influence, which is funny because like when he was younger, I read this interview how he like hates metal and he hates Anthrax and all this stuff and then to go into Quicksand after.
That's pretty funny.
But he's writing that album. He's writing Siv's new band's album. Like it's just like, this dude is like a creative force.
And you forgot like, Rival Schools, which...
I did not forget Rival
Schools. I was like, like, yeah. And again, I forget the name of it. It's got the two kids on the front.
United
screen.
By Fate.
United by Fate. Yeah. Like, absolute banger.
And that was a another decade later. That was like 2004,
yeah, he just... I feel like he just kept going and each of his projects were just better and better, but in different ways.
Totally different
It's like
ways.
His music evolved... probably the way that the listener would be evolving.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. He's such an interesting dude. Like, I find him so fascinating. Like yeah, just a little weirdo.
Musical genius.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A savant.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just looking. I've got some more questions. Yeah, what you were saying about Straight Edge is interesting. And like, to just sort of, like, I guess put more of the lyrics into context and, like, how they would... different, like why this was such an important record. I think this is a good quote. This is from an old interview. This is from Schism fanzine before Start Today came out.
Okay.
So they were young.
Yeah.
And so it's Walter and Luke, who was the drummer at the time.
Okay.
So Walter's saying, I think of Straight Edge as being a smart, caring person. And a smart, caring person doesn't go to fight. You go to shows because you like the music and you like dancing. And he's talking about one of their songs on their demo. He's like, Better Than You is about people who go to a show and want to fight you. And you know that you can walk away from it and not get caught up in their macho stupidity.
Yeah.
And then Luke chimes in. He goes, it's not fair to say that people who aren't straight edge do that. It's anyone who does that.
Yeah.
You know, so straight edge, not straight edge. Like, it's so interesting to read the interview from that time and be like, they're not outright... explaining the politics of the scene, but just in the way they're phrasing shit, there's like, oh, there's a division here. There's like, straight edge, like non-straight edge people hate straight edge. It's like, it's just weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously they're kids. Like they've got kid brain as well, but like,
but they're kind of explaining what they see things as how they, to me, I'm like, they're kind of saying how they can see it as being different.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I really like this. This is Walter. Some people say, if you walk away, you're a pussy. I say if you walk away, you're better than the person who started the fight.
Oh.
I think that really sums up their outlook, their point of view.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
Yeah, I know. I love it. I love it. And I've got another... I really want to drive home like how important they were.
Yeah.
So I've got another quote from the write-up from Tom Brienne and Stereogum. In their way, Gorilla Biscuits were revivalists. This is the late 80s, right?
Yeah.
They were bringing back the same youthful spirit that Minor Threat had injected a few years earlier. So like, I guess five, six years earlier. Wave after wave of youth crew hardcore bands follow Gorilla Biscuits. And I hear echoes of the band's gruff sense of melody everywhere. He says, and I like this. Rancid's Matt Freeman, who's a bass player for Rancid, for instance, must have studied Gorilla Biscuits bassist Arthur Smelios. Because I get that. Like, you don't really think about it, Aura, because Rancid is such like a...
You see it as a different thing.
Totally different scene. Yeah. Right? Like they're punk. They're kind of like, not crusty, but like kind of that weird bridging. Yeah. Bit of reggae, bit of ska in Rancid. But then you're like, you listen to those bass lines and like, Matt Freeman is a crazy... musician. He's insane. But then you put on Start Today and you're like,
oh, this sounds like Rancid.
He's like shredding on the bass. Yeah. It's crazy. And there's like all this, it's just great. Like the musicianship is something else. And I think that's another thing that sets them apart from almost everything that had come before. Like maybe except for like bands like Bad Brains, like these kind of like
I feel like
virtuosos.
Well, I feel like every musician in the band is doing the most.
They're doing the most.
You know, because sometimes there might be one or two in a band and you're like, they're amazing. Yeah. And the others are like, I don't know who they are. Yeah. But every part.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
In Gorilla Biscuits, you're like, whoa.
It just all comes together like really nicely in a way that a lot of other bands kind of... Well, I guess like I said, it's the end of the decade. Like by this point, like it's an established genre. And like that quote said, like music aside, you had this whole issue within the New York hardcore scene. Like you had the Christians, you had Straight Edge, you had like all these, like you had the drug scene, like all this sort of stuff. And then like these kids who were like not even 21, they couldn't even drink yet. Like, we're Straight Edge. We're not allowed to drink. So, you know,
we're not allowed to drink. And so therefore we are.
They come out and just like do this thing that's like this explosion. And with this outlook, which is like, almost naive. They're just like, no, let's just all get along.
Yeah, let's all get along and have a good time.
They're like the Smash Mouth of the time. Like, why can't we be friends, you know? Like, and I think they did cop it a little bit. Like, they copped it. But, like, for young people who just started going to shows, I think that's what really made the difference.
Yeah.
Because, like, you just had this whole show just packed with, like, people in their late teens, early 20s, just like stage diving, just like having fun. And that was like the message, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, no, like, don't be Straight Edge. You don't have to be Straight Edge, but you also don't have to like shoot up heroin.
It's kind of like just, you can just have don't fun. Be Straight Edge and don't be a dick.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, do whatever you want, but like, be nice about
be,
it.
Just be nice.
Yeah.
Which is so funny when you think of hardcore. Like, that's the other thing. Like, comedians will come in on this podcast and I think they get really alienated by the level of aggression and the level of angst in some of the records.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they're like, they're so angry.
Yeah.
But I think if I had a comedian on talking about this record, they'd be like, what are they so fucking happy about?
Yeah,
I think this is almost more alienating.
Yeah.
The positive mental attitude
confusing,
is like...
confusing. Because this is... The music is sometimes fast and feels like it's going to be aggressive.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're like, let's just all hang out.
Let's hang out and have fun.
Yeah,
friends.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's polar opposites
totally.
In a way.
Yeah, yeah. It's not just like the literal words that they're saying, I think. It's also like just the overall energy. It's like so... This is kind of the reason I wanted to do this podcast because, like, you can't put it into words. You just have to listen to this record because, like, sure, you got the lyrics, but the overall energy is like this abstract thing and you either feel it or you don't.
Well,
and that's fine, but...
This is an album that for years I couldn't tell you probably a lot of the lyrics.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't tell you what most of the songs were saying.
Yeah.
Because I just musically liked what it was.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
I just was kind of like, this is fun. This is engaging. Yeah. I want to move to this kind of thing.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, because I played bass and guitar, I never really cared too much about lyrics as much as I do now or as much as when I started actually writing lyrics. Yeah, but like you... I don't know, like even this was probably one of the first bands because they're so like loud and proud out in front of everything.
Mm.
Like you know, a song like Start Today, even a song like, oh fuck, I forgot the title. The one about like jokes that hurt other people's feelings.
I've got my notes.
Words
my
We
notes.
Say, is it words?
Yeah, Words We Say.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even that, it's like, damn, good point.
Yeah, Things We Say.
Things We Say, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And
Cats and Dogs.
Cats and Dogs have like, all the luck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's kind of like, why? Yeah, yeah. It really...
They're questioning big things,
yeah.
But in a really fun and accessible way.
Yeah. And like I said, naive before, like I think it could come across as naive, but I think realistically it's like, sure, life is complex. These issues are complex, but I know where I stand.
Yeah.
So that makes it kind of simple.
Yeah.
So... I don't know. Yeah, I really appreciate what they did on this record, especially for how young they were. It's crazy.
I mean, there's even point. I don't know if we're allowed to get into it yet, but like, there's points. I was like, there's like a track where they're basically like going in on all the old people in the scene.
Yeah. What was that called? Is it Competition?
I was like,
It's called Maybe. Competition.
I think so. Yeah. I was like, I don't know. But the fact that they're just kind of like, you're so miserable and you're doing this for money, or you're like doing this to have cred, but like, can you just go away and let other people have fun then?
Sure, yeah,
like, give it up.
Yeah,
no one cares. You're doing it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, and I think that's something they've carried through. Like, they really do put their money where their mouth is, because obviously they do these reunions every few years, but like, they get new young bands to open for them.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yeah.
And like, they let these bands just like shine.
Yeah.
They're on a Gorilla Biscuit show. It's high profile. It's like, big platform. I think they just really like, I mean, how much money would they be making from a reunion realistically? Like, you know,
I don't know, but they did have the collaboration with Paul Frank, and I do believe they also released some Funko Pops at one time. You know, there's a lot that they had going on.
Well, look, good for them. I think it was honestly
a Funko Pop. Like, it was the little gorilla guy.
That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah,
that's kind of cool.
Yeah, so would have been like mid-early 2000s.
Yeah, they know what their fans want.
I definitely had one of the like the Paul Frank shirts, because it was just a collab they did with their merch. You know?
Yeah. The last thing I want to say in terms of background is just like, this is just a quote from Vice, which says, "The fact is, without Gorilla Biscuits and their peers paving the groundwork, even despite their flaws, there would be no hardcore scene today. Without them preaching about unity, a concept which seems basic by current standards, the door would have been closed to the next generation of bands to voice their opinions. Without them making it cool to tell white supremacists to fuck off, the scene would be less welcoming to diversity."
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Probably true.
I think yes. I think maybe like what would be more like accurate is like this record and the band sort of stand as like an emblem to that, or like a plaque to that ideal. And like, as we were talking about before, there's issues in any small scene.
Yeah.
Like there's going to be fuck people. Like, a community only works if everyone in the community makes it work. And like, it's just life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I think like, looking at this as kind of like a tent pole, and like coming back to this, and like what you were saying before, like, guys, don't like, have you forgotten
The reason
we got into this subculture, this type of music.
Like,
I think they stand as a really good example
of what
hardcore's kind of meant to be.
Well, and I think because the album itself is like lasted in such a great one that even if you're younger, probably weren't even alive when it came out.
Yeah.
And you listen to this as some of your first introduction to hardcore music, you're getting that to begin with. Those like ethics or whatever are getting instilled in you from being able to listen to this album.
Yeah, totally. Well, yeah, I feel that way. Like, I already recorded it, but like, it comes out. Sorry. Last week's episode. So I'm recording everything out of order because I saved this one specifically for you, because I wanted to talk to like a fellow reformed hardcore kid. But I talked to a friend, a comedian named Meg Yeager, and the episode is already out, about Bad Religion. But I was sort of saying the same thing about like, getting into punk did shape my worldview.
Oh, and mine
It wasn't so much Bad Religion, but like a band like Goldfinger were the reason I went vegan.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just...
Yeah. I think,
and looking back on a lot of like Rage Against the Machine are another good one. I've got an episode about Inside Out coming up, but like those sorts of bands shape my politics. Like yes, I'm a lefty, blah 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 blah. But like, get angry about it. Like, fuck George W. Like I wouldn't even know about the difference between Republican Democrat, like the American sort of power system that does affect global politics, if it wasn't for someone like Zach De La Rocha. So
I was like, no effects.
No
was
effects,
was
no
the one for me.
Yeah, yes.
That I forget what that album is, but it's the one that is like all about American politics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can't remember the name of it.
But that was the album that I was like, oh.
Ooh. And they had the shirt.
I was like,
they're not my president shirt.
Yeah. I was like, is this what this is?
Yeah.
Oh, I was like, yeah, that is messed up.
And it's such a good, I think the reason it's like so, like, it means, it, like I'm 38, you know? And I'm still talking about this shit, is because you had those formative kind of ideas, like you had the ideas, but then you had all the other shit that was just like, you know, the music video of the Descendants just drinking coffee, pouring coffee, like just stupid shit as well.
Yeah.
Just being a dumb asshole as well as being like, no, but seriously, like you got both.
Yeah. I think it's a positive and a negative in the way that I think.
Oh, yeah, because I've got holes in my brain because of punk rock. Yeah.
Well, like hardcore and punk just like it shaped the way that I questioned things, the way I interacted with the world, the way that I cared about things, which in a way is positive because you'd learn about so many more things, you know, so many more issues, and you meet other people that are passionate and whatever else. But in another way, you kind of get spat out the other side and you're like, oh, people don't know about this?
Yeah.
People like. When I say, you know, when you go to talk about an important topic, they're like, how do you know that?
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, right.
I remember,
a bubble in a way.
It is such a bubble, yeah. And I remember trying to have discussions like that about like, how can you not take a stance on this?
Yeah.
And really pushing people away.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you listen to these bands, and it's like, no, you got to stand up for what you believe in. And then you're like, to the point of ruining friendships? I don't know. Like maybe with something like, Israel Palestine, like, kind of yes, maybe like
you can ruin a friendship over that for sure. Yeah.
Like I've seen enough dead kids on Instagram.
I reckon. You know, that's
But like then like smaller things like what we're talking about before, like just like the idea, like in abstract of trans rights or trans people.
Yeah.
At the time in 2012 or 2013, it's like, do you ruin a friendship over that? What is essentially a new idea to someone who's 21, like, you know,
and it's kind of like what is the line of preaching at people about issues or opening up discussions?
Veganism
as well, I felt, even within the scene, could be very alienating. And that's where you had all those little subsets where it was like, you can be friends with these people because you know, you're not vegan or you're not straight edge, and so therefore you're bad. And it's like, I think the world's a bit more nuanced.
Well, that's what I would always come back. Like, I'm not vegan anymore, but like I was for a really, really fucking long time, until last year actually, is when I started eating meat again. But I always came back to that because it's like, if I'm vegan, I'm vegan for this reason. Like, I believe that you should not murder another living being.
Yeah.
But if I take a hardline stance on that in terms of like, you know, like a Morrissey, like meat is murder, and I can't get over that, we wouldn't be sitting here talking right now.
No. Do
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and it's just not worth it. So I think what I had to adjust my expectations and kind of like realistically look at what the world is, look at how the world works, and be like, it is murder.
Yeah.
But I guess that's okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, you kind of...
You know? Like, it's kind of like, I don't want to do it for my own reasons.
Yeah.
So it really did affect my worldview, where it's like, not necessarily giving people a pass, but it's like, okay, so if I can sit down with someone who's having a steak, I could see how someone might want to write a love letter to a serial killer in prison.
I think,
and I'm not going to judge that person for, because I'm sitting opposite you while you're eating dead cow, sort of thing.
Like, yeah.
I don't know if that sounds fucking insane to anyone listening.
I'm the serial killer vegan is
But if meat is murder, is what I'm saying.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Correct. Yeah. I think for me as well. I've gone off on the vegan tangent now.
Yeah.
A very interesting thing that I listened to once was this this decolonizing podcast.
Sure, yeah.
Where it was an Indigenous American speaking about the fact that veganism is all well and good until the fact that you look at their cultural history and tradition.
Yeah.
And if you turn up to your family's house and your mom or whoever has like made you all this traditional food and you go, oh, I don't actually eat animals anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you're kind of missing the point of your culture and your tradition.
Yeah.
And so they were saying in that...
Veganism is for white people, yes.
Veganism is for white people is what they were saying.
And it is. That's the other thing. Like, now I think I just have a more holistic view of it, where it's like, okay, so I'm at home, I'm going to try and eat.
You can make choices.
No meat at home.
Make choices.
That sort of thing. Just make choices. Yeah, absolutely.
You just make better choices that align with things you believe in. Yeah. And it doesn't mean it has to be hard and fast, black or white.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is, again, the real thing that sets this album apart. Like, they were like, they really just come across as very reasonable, normal dudes. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, I'm going to be vegan, but you don't have to be. Like, let's just, yeah, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
let's like, go get a Coke together.
Totally, totally. Yeah.
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, we're talking about the Fall Out Boy cover, like the Tony Hawk stuff.
Oh, so good.
Was that your intro to Gorilla Biscuits, hearing that cover?
No.
No?
So, I actually have a really stupid story about how I found out who Gorilla Biscuits were.
Okay.
So I was like 16, 17. I'd started to go to like a lot
what,
of...
What year would this have been?
This like 2004, 2005.
Sure, yeah, yeah. You're a couple of years younger. Than
yeah. I'd started to go to a lot of local shows. I grew up in Western Sydney. So yeah. Any show that was at Penrith Panthers on a Sunday afternoon, I was there.
Yeah.
So I saw a bunch of bands. I had no idea who they were.
Yep.
And so through that, like I'd made friends and I was hanging out with like... you know, guys that were in bands mm-hmm. that I'd become friends mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. in the Inner West. And I was staying there after a show and they said to me in the morning, do you know what Gorilla Biscuits are?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I, thinking I was like so smart, was like, yeah, like, isn't it those cakes they made in the play The Crucible that is made out of their own wee?
What?
Like...
The Crucible. Okay.
Yeah.
Piss cakes.
Piss cakes. And then I was like, they were like, just laughed at me and they didn't tell me. And so obviously I go home, I log onto my like little desktop computer and I Google it and I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, yeah.
They're a band.
They're a band.
They're not the Crucible Piss Cakes.
They're not Piss Cakes. No. Yeah. That's so funny. So it was just like older guys being like, you should check out this band essentially.
Yeah, but in doing kind of it a, in the in way, way, in a mean way.
In the gatekeeping way. In the, that in, keeps hardcore real.
In the gatekeeping way of like, we're going to make fun of this girl that has no idea man. Yet.
Do you think that's, I mean, the reason like we reconnected was because two awesome American bands to like I do feel
Pats Only
a little bit of yeah Pats Only a little bit of guilt of not going to more local shows, but like yeah Fiddlehead and Drug Church got me out of the fucking house and back into hardcore shows, and that's where we kind of reconnected.
Yeah.
Going to those shows and you went to see Angel Dust when they toured as
I did, yeah.
Do you feel like that sexism, because it was just so, especially in Brisbane, going to Mary Street in Brisbane, it was fucking sexist, dude.
Yeah.
Like, it was dudes and then their girlfriends.
Yeah.
And dudes would never introduce you to their girlfriends. They just stand there silently while you had a conversation. Like, it was really sexist.
Well, essentially, if you're a girl that listened to hardcore, you didn't actually listen
you
to
only
it,
wanted
right?
to fuck the dudes
you just
in the
wanted
bands.
To fuck
yeah.
the dudes
yeah.
in bands. Go figure.
That felt so uncomfortable at the time. And looking back, I'm like...
It's embarrassing.
It feels even more insane.
Yeah.
Like, even at the time, like, I was just like, I mean, pretty naive kid from the suburbs. And I've always kind of felt, I did always feel kind of out of place, even when I was in bands. Like, because I was just like, oh, but I'm not real because I didn't grow up. I didn't have it tough.
Yeah.
And like, most of these guys are fucking have rich parents anyway.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel like I was in any place to sort of be like.
To say anything.
Why aren't the chicks.
Yeah.
Like Bikini Kill were a thing
yeah.
10 years ago. Like why are the chicks, you know? And I eventually got to the point where I'd be like, if that happened, I would just introduce myself to
yeah.
whoever was in the circle, like the guy's girlfriend, whatever. Which I think you get a lot of that in comedy as well, like open mic comedy, like someone's girlfriend will come and they'll just be like, I'm like, hey,
yeah.
what's your name?
It's
like,
just
are
a
you
person.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah. Blink twice
right?
if you need help.
You're surrounded by dudes. Are you okay?
Yeah, yeah.
God damn it. But do you think that sexism in hardcore has kind of gone by the wayside, like going to these recent shows in the last year?
I think there's a lot of big changes.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, is it my place to... say what it is now because I'm not involved as much. So I don't know what it feels like
for
people now. Yeah, yeah. I've been told it's so much better and so inclusive.
Yeah.
As someone that has gone that's not in the middle of it anymore, yeah. it feels the same, just a little different.
Sure.
But that could be me just being jaded, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
to me, I think there's still a lot of room for it to not...
Always room for improvement.
To not be tokenistic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to not just be the one group of acceptable girls.
That's an interesting point.
Acceptable diversity.
Yeah, because my friend, so at the Drug Church show, like my friend Rosie, I think you know Rosie?
Yeah, I met Rosie that night.
Yeah. So Rosie Delaney, she's a comedian, trans woman, very loud, very confident, you know?
Yeah.
And at drug church, she gets up on stage dive, flashes everybody, in her own words, her norgs, stage dives. And I'm like, it's so good that you like, not just as a woman, but as a trans woman, you can just do that. And like, you just, it's funny. I'm being ridiculous, and you feel comfortable. But like, is it only the loud, extroverted people who get to have that level of acceptance? What about the introverted people who are a bit more shy? Yeah. Do they get included in it? Like, do you have to be loud and brash? Like,
or do you have to know the right people?
You have to know the right people, all that sort of stuff.
That's where I still am like a little bit squeamish, because I'm kind of like, I'd like to hope, and from what I can see from the outside, but it's only one, it's still, you know, the people that know the people.
Yeah, you got to be in the right.
You still got to know the right people.
Or you got to be a cool tattooist who's booked out.
You need to be tattoo adjacent.
Tattoo adjacent. Yeah.
All your friends must be tattoo. No. And I don't want to, like, I think the thing for me is I don't want to talk negatively on those people, right?
No. I don't think it's on that. They're not the ones who are just accepted by virtue of who they are. They're not the ones perpetuating a problem. They're just being themselves. I'm talking about the gatekeepers, whatever you want to say, however you want to define it. Like, why are certain people accepted and other people are kind of ignored?
Yeah.
It's not that they're held back or they're not welcome. They're just kind of
Just kind of like, oh, you're there, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think in America it seems a lot better. Like, there's a lot of like bands that aren't just like female fronted, but have women just in the band.
Yeah.
You know, and there's like women who are documenting shows, like photographers.
Just like a lot more involved.
People who are involved, in America.
I mean, I think we do at the moment in Sydney as well have like, I think it's Sabrina Long is a female photographer.
Yeah, but they just
moved,
didn't they? They moved to Melbourne, I think. Her and Simon.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know well enough, but like,
Shout out Simon and Sabrina. Sabrina's old band was really good too. They were in a band called Empower in Brisbane. Real good.
Because to me, I'm like, you know, the more that I see these people and their names and stuff, you know, you're seeing more and more involvement. Yeah. But
and Nicole Goodwin, the photographer from Melbourne.
Yeah,
she's really
active. She's been photographing for
photographing
for years.
Ages. Yeah.
Years. Yeah. Probably she's even great. Back when I was doing things. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. So yeah, there's a way to go.
There's always room for improvement. Yeah. You know?
I got into Gorilla. I can't even remember, because I remember the band Sugar Ray. They covered New Direction.
Really?
On one of their records. I was trying to look it up, but the record, that particular record, isn't on Spotify.
Sugar Ray. Covered Gorilla Biscuits.
I'm pretty sure they covered New Direction.
Damn.
I'm pretty sure.
That seems mad.
Yeah. And I was like, and then I like learned that was a Gorilla Biscuits cover. But also, I just don't remember what came first, because like, I love Quicksand. I love old Quicksand. I'm not as big a fan on the newest shit, but like Slip and Manic Compression. Mm-hmm. This is Walter Schreifel's 90s hardcore band after Gorilla Biscuits. Those two albums from the early mid 90s are just like, that changed music for me.
Yeah.
And it changed hardcore for me as well.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to do this. Yeah. And it kind of wasn't as cool as being in a Youth Crew hardcore band.
No,
or something like
Youth
that.
Crew had
like,
its minute.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just don't know what came first, or if it was Rival Schools in 2006.
I want to say Rival Schools might have been. Well, to be fair, when I started at Resist, I was, you know, 17. Mm. And so I only knew a small amount. And so what I would do is I would just play all the CDs. I would just pick random CDs and work out, do I like this band or do I not like this band?
Yeah, nice.
With no context. Because for me, a big thing was like, I didn't want to know who the people were, what they look like, anything. Yeah. Do I like what they're singing?
Yeah.
And
so
I don't know if it was Tony Hawk's or if it was...
Just working in the shop?
Working in the shop, having that guy ask me if I knew what Gorilla Biscuits were.
All that stuff.
All of it at once. Yeah. And Rival Schools and Gorilla Biscuits came at the same time for me.
Yeah.
Because I am more on the side of, you know, the melodic post-hardcore emo.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so...
Yeah, Rival Schools are a weird one, because like when that came out, all the reviews were like, oh, they're the new Nirvana. I'm like, there's never going to be a new Nirvana.
No.
There's no Nirvana. That,
also,
that's
I just don't
happen.
Know if I would think of that as Nirvana.
But they said that about At The Drive-In. They said that about Blood Brothers. They said about all these different Blood fucking Brothers. Alt bands along the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, either way, whatever it was, like if it was Walter Trifles in Quicksand, Walter Trifles in Rival Schools, either way, it was
I think it was Walter Trifles.
It was just Walter Trifles being Walter Trifles. Eventually I went back and I checked out Gorilla Biscuits.
Yes.
And it was definitely, so we talked about this before we recorded. I totally forgot. In 2008, I remembered seeing Gorilla Biscuits.
Yeah.
I'm like, they toured and I wasn't that into them yet.
Okay.
And I remember seeing them. I remember talking to Walter out the front of the venue and he was like being a little weirdo.
Were
and
you like,
really
I
hard.
Love Quicksand.
I didn't say anything. I felt like I wasn't allowed or something. Yeah, but here's the thing I forgot. My band fucking opened for them.
And here's the thing I forgot. I probably booked your band to open
before I even knew you. It was crazy. Yeah. I do remember, like you're talking about working in the Resist shop.
Yeah.
And I still think about it. Every time I walk down King Street, I walk past where that Civic video was. I'm like, that's where Resist was.
And before that, it was on Australia Street. Opposite.
This is before my time.
The fire engine.
That's way
the fire engine
time.
Place.
The fire engine place. The place where they keep the fire engine.
Well, I was like, where the fire engines are.
Yeah.
I think
you
it's
know those cool cars that don't do anything.
They're
just really cool.
They're red. They make a noise. It was opposite that.
Yeah, right. That's definitely before my time.
That was where the OG one was. Yeah. So that's where it started, and then down in underneath Civic Video.
And I definitely remember going in there first couple of times I toured to Sydney in my bands, and I do remember you. I remember you, and you were tiny.
Yeah,
you're just like this tiny, like goth emo girl, and I was like, God damn, she's so intimidating.
Look,
you looked so mad.
Everybody, like, I feel like the general feedback from people was like, that girl's a bitch.
I would never,
and I was kind of like, have you heard of social anxiety and depression?
Yeah, there's a little thing called mental illness. Because you guys are going to love it in about 15 years' time.
Yeah.
It's going to be the whole genre.
But there was a lot of like, you were so intimidating. It's like you just sat there and you were like on your...
Oh, I'm not putting it on you.
No, I'm putting
it on me.
But I was like, this is what general feedback.
Right.
And then I feel like if you know me, you're like, oh, you're just real awkward.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. Because, again, I don't know if you felt this way, but because, like, it's just, like, all this stupid shit, like, things that you should value, and then you get into the punk scene, and I kind of felt almost like survivor's guilt or something. Like, my parents were still together. We weren't poor. Like, all this sort of shit, and I'm like, oh, I'm not meant to be here. I don't belong in this scene.
Because,
I wasn't a tough guy. I'd never been beat up. All that sort of shit.
Yeah.
And then, like, you kind of get a bit older, and I'm like, none of these cunts had it tough. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I had an opposite because I did have a pretty.
You had a rough.
I had a rough, like, childhood.
Classic Western Sydney upbringing. Is that?
I had the classic Western Sydney upbringing.
Yeah.
So there was, like, you know, so much mess at home.
Yeah.
Alcoholism. Yeah. Drugs, prison.
You had a reason to be in.
I had a reason. I was angry.
You were real. You were one of the real ones.
I was really angry.
Yeah.
I didn't really have friends, so I started going to shows, that was how I had all my friends, and that's how I met everyone. And so then it made sense for me to do it as a job.
How come
like,
you never started a band with all that stuff sort of to...
Because I was a girl and girls don't...
You're not allowed. Yeah, sorry, man.
Girls aren't allowed in
Girls
bed.
To the back.
Girls to the back. Be quiet. Shut your mouth. You got nothing to say.
Start dating someone in a band.
Yeah. Get a boyfriend that does it
God
instead.
Damn
it. I think I didn't feel like I could.
Yeah.
Like okay. I really didn't feel...
You didn't want to?
I did, and there was like a few times where I'd spoken to some of my friends and I was like, oh, we should do this. And like, this could be really fun. Yeah. And I was like, but it's going to be really angry. Like, because I have a lot to say.
What would it have sounded like if you had done a band? It wouldn't have sounded like Gorilla Biscuits, I doubt.
No, it wouldn't have sounded like Gorilla Biscuits. I don't know.
Would it have been like tough?
I don't think super tough. I think I like, you know, like, this isn't even hardcore, but like Pretty Girls Make Graves.
Oh, sure. Okay. Like
but I would want it a little bit dirtier, like a little bit heavier. Okay. Right.
What's that band you really like? The emo band. There's a band that you... Is it Wax Paper?
Waxwing?
Waxwing.
Oh, man.
Is that a Vodolato band?
Oh, that's Vodolato? Rocky and Cody Vodolato. Yeah, right. We're both in that band. Yeah. Number one band of all time.
These are emo names for anyone emo listening. Names, who's sorry. Cody Vodolato was in Vodolato, whatever, was in fucking
Blood Brothers.
Yes. And Rocky Vodolato was a solo artist.
Yeah, still is.
Still is. They were in that weird mockumentary, The Edge of Quarrel.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is just this weird
about
artifact.
About Straight Edge, yeah.
Weird artifact about from the, weird.
The Age of Quarrel or something. The Edge of Quarrel.
It's called Edge of
because
Quarrel.
Because it's a take on The Age of Quarrel.
Yeah,
yeah. I think they get beat up in it for being emo.
That would have been like post-Earth Crisis, Reversal of Man controversy. Yeah. Sorry, we're getting into real hardcore lore here. People are getting
so, something that probably, harder, faster, angry, but fun.
You still want fun?
I would want people to be able to dance to it. So there's something that I saw when I first kind of like started to read all the books and watch the DVDs in hardcore was in the 90s and the 80s shows, people weren't moshing like to pit slay and kill people. Girls were at the front dancing to this. And I was like, why can't we have that?
Why can't we have that? Yeah.
Why can't I be dancing at the front without getting punched in the head? Like, is that too much to ask?
Yeah.
So that was my idea, but.
Yeah. I've still got so much to say.
We've said too much.
Do you have to go?
I'm okay.
We can do a lightning round just to finish it off.
Yeah, sorry.
No, this is great. It's nice to be overtime and not have to like struggle for content. That's a lot of what I kind of wanted to ask you about. Like just sort of, just the politics of the scene and like how our experience in the scene kind of mirrors what these guys were talking about 20 years earlier.
Yeah.
1989 this was. And like, it's just so relevant. And I don't, like you said, I think it's a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah.
Like sure, maybe things should change a bit more.
I think there's always just room for improvement. But I think the big thing that I've realized is that people need to realize balance.
Yeah.
There's more, you need a full world perspective, not just a bubble.
Yeah.
And I think it's still a bit of a bubble.
Yeah. We've touched on Straight Edge like a fair bit.
A lot, yeah.
Yeah, but I think like one big thing that Gorilla Biscuits did that was similar to what Minor Threat and Fugazi did for me was they made Straight Edge fun.
Yeah.
Because when I started going to shows, do you remember the band Throwdown?
Yeah.
And Bleeding Through?
Oh, yeah.
So there's
I loved Bleeding Through though.
Yeah, I never got into it. I like Throwdown more than Bleeding Through, but like as much as like, you know, music aside, those bands just presented and 18 Visions as well. There was this California, Orange County
kind of aggressive
scene. So heavy, so macho and like...
Lot of eyeliner though for macho.
Eyeliner for a macho.
You know, there was like, a lot of eyeliner and hair dye.
I think the amount of bench presses offset the amount of eyeliner though. Okay. Like I think it was still like very straight white dude vibes, like especially Throwdown, I think.
Yeah.
Especially Throwdown. And I'm like, that was Straight Edge. And like in Brisbane, we had this band Wishful Wings.
Yeah.
And then I Killed the Prom Queen were like kind of the national.
Yeah.
I know they weren't a Straight Edge band, but the dudes in that band.
Some of them.
X'd up and all that sort of stuff. I'm like, is this just tough guy shit? And like, I might have liked the music, but I didn't relate to.
The tough guy.
Yeah, I wasn't fucking tough.
No.
I'm still not tough.
Like, and to me, I was kind of like, ooh, it's a bit violent.
It's a bit violent.
Like the Straight Edge gangs?
Oh, yeah, the gangs, the Byron Bay gangs, all that sort of stuff.
I was like, what was it, War XXX or something?
There was a band called The War.
That one.
I forget that guy's name.
He was
funny. He was a funny guy. He was very aggressive, but he was like pretty fucking funny.
Yeah.
But he got, so there was this band from, I think they were Gold Coast. They might have been Brisbane. It might have been Sunshine Coast.
You say the band, I'll tell you.
The War. I'm talking about The War.
Oh, I was like, there was another one?
But
yeah,
he
yeah.
got, the guy, the singer got shat on relentlessly because they released this single called You're Next and they misspelt your. It was Y-O-U-R next, not Y-O-U apostrophe R. And everyone's like, you're a fucking idiot, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, all right, you could knock your head off. So maybe like,
chill out a little bit.
It is very funny though.
Yeah, that is funny.
I think the song even was called X Your Next X, like as well. Like just like X's everywhere.
You had to have X's everywhere.
I did X up for a little while. I liked it. It was fun, but yeah. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Kind of got over it. But yeah, they made it. They made it fun. And like, again, from that old interview in Schism, these just a couple of like insights from Walter. Talking about how he sees straight edge. And he's like, look, if you aren't tied down and obsessed by something, I don't understand how people could be against that. Which makes sense. So it's like straight edge can still be like this defined thing, like this discrete sort of thing. But like if you've got a whole external life to that, then like it's just part of who you are. And Pat Flynn, our mutual friend.
Yes.
Pat Flynn.
Yes.
Do you remember, I don't know, like when you turned up with him at the Fiddlehead show.
Yeah.
Pat Flynn's the singer of Fiddlehead. He sang for Have Heart. And a decade ago, I interviewed him at a Have Heart show for a magazine I was writing for. And he said a similar thing. He's like, I don't really think about straight edge that much. He was like, I don't want to misquote him. So I'm just, I'm paraphrasing. He's like, I look at straight edge like just as another part of myself. Like my arm, like my hand, like that.
Yeah.
Like straight edge is just a part of me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really like that. And then more on the straight edge thing, Walter says, the new kids that come to shows see that skinhead and that flight jacket and they'll become a skin. Not saying that's bad, but why shouldn't I advertise what I am?
True.
And I guess like we don't have like as much of a skinhead sort of scene in Australia.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Yeah, yeah.
I feel like when I first started going to shows in the inner west in Sydney.
Yeah.
So it used to be at the Sando upstairs, tiny room, and the Arncliffe and just like little holes in the walls. That was back when like there was a lot of older bands around.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And there was a fair few, I would say, whether they were dressing that way for fashion or because they actually were skinheads. Yeah.
I think skinhead, I mean, if you're not a nationalist skinhead, I think a lot of it is just fashion. Similar to youth crew.
But
it's just fashion. Like
I think I could be wrong, but I think like back in those days, if you did something a bit off, you would get the shit beat out of you and you would soon learn.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Don't do that. Yeah.
So that's why I'm like, I don't reckon.
Do we need to bring that back?
Nah.
No? Okay.
Everyone just chill out. Have a
Everyone
Coke.
Everyone chill out.
Have a Coca-Cola. Yeah, talk about it.
And then, so that's straight edge. And also like the idea of them being New York hardcore. Cause like that's such a genre. Like,
and you think of it as the tough guy.
Yeah. I think New York hardcore, I think Cro-Mags, I think Agfront. Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't Madball from New York?
Madball. Yeah. Absolutely. Madball.
Yeah.
But these guys as well. And they kind of balance it out a little bit. So this isn't a more recent one. This is from Thrasher. This is old Walter. This is like, I think just a couple of years ago. New York has shaped the band just as it's shaped us as people. A lot. We grew up in racial and class diversity in school, on public transport, the ultra privileged next to the destitute. Which is like, that is just the New York experience. Like that, I think that's why New York hardcore is maybe like at the forefront of the entire.
Yeah. Because
like they are the figurehead or the masthead for hardcore worldwide. I think because it is everyone. It's this melting pot.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. In New York and especially Queens, where Civ, Arthur, and I are from, it's impossible to wall yourself off from your fellow man across race, across class, culture, high art, and low. It endows you with a certain. He's such a funny guy. I love the way he talks. It endows you with a certain worldliness right out of the gate, an openness and higher comfort level with the unexpected, and with the unexpected and new than you'll find in other cities. I love it.
Yeah,
I think the band really sums that up. Like,
I also
easy
like,
for him to say, like, you know, 30 years after the record came out. Like, but
he was like, back then, this is what it was.
Or yeah, or it's even just like retroactively kind of defining it. But it makes sense to me. Like,
yeah. I'm like, so what he's saying basically is like, you couldn't be apart, like apart from everything. You kind of were just amongst it.
Yeah. I think like. And it kind of does match up with what they were saying when they were younger in that fanzine interview where it's like, you can't draw lines. So you can't just draw lines in the sand and be like, you're over there, I'm over here. You have to be like, I'm this, but we're here together.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I really get from it. That's what makes me feel good listening to the album. Did you want to talk about the controversy, the All Lives Matter controversy that Siv fell into on accident?
I don't think I know
about
it.
This was the main thing that kept coming up when I was just trying to find any sort of history. So basically, I think it was at This Is Hardcore.
Okay.
And he accidentally, he did not say All Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying, it was like at the height of Black Lives Matter, and he was like basically saying like, it's fucking, this isn't the quote, but like the message of the quote, as he's clarified in interviews since, was like, it's fucking insane that we need to wear shirts that say Black Lives Matter. Because it's like, of course Black Lives Matter. And then he goes on like brown, yellow, blah, 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 in the on stage speech. And then people were like, oh, he's saying all lives matter. But he was saying like, all of you matter. Like everyone here matters. Mm. Like, and it's just like, maybe it wasn't as much of a dog whistle then, or he wasn't aware of the dog whistle that is all lives matter.
Yeah.
But he just fell into it. And it's so funny when you listen to this album, you listen to a song called Degradation, which is like an anti-racist anthem.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I think, you know, hearing the explanation of it, he maybe was just going on, you know, a little straight edge rant.
You don't,
I say straight edge rant because that's what most bands are, the straight edge bands that are like, I'm going to talk about something important in
between. You don't plan what you're going to say.
You don't plan, and all of a sudden you've dug a hole.
And he's an old guy, and he's like,
I'm trying to impress on you that every single person matters, and so I'm listing them all, and I don't,
Anyway, but this is what he said in response to it. He was like, talking about where they came from. He's like, they were Nazis. They were racists. We were going to places where there was a Klan vibe. He remembers his tours in the middle of the United States and Europe. Yeah, especially Europe's still like that. It's fucked. Areas that were not always as inclusive as his melting pot home of New York City. And then he says, so when you were standing on stage talking about unity, talking about being one family, talking about how race doesn't matter, you were literally putting your ass on the line. So that's like, it's just interesting how things have changed in that way, where it's like the color blindness, like I don't see color, used to be a positive thing. Whereas now it's like, no, you kind of got to see color.
You got to see, because you got to see the disparity and realize. Yeah.
I just thought that was interesting. Cause like they were anti-racist. They were anti-fascist. They were, it was just like, it was such a reaction. Cause like Agnostic Front, they got accused of being fascist. They got accused of being nationalist.
Yeah.
Even though they were like Cuban and Italian and like from immigrant families. But I guess like some of the, I get it. Like, but I think Gorilla Biscuits came out as this like proactive, really self-aware reaction to everything. The way the New York
City kind of degraded. The way it was all going.
Yeah. Sorry, I feel like I've talked so much. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
I think had like main points. Let me just have a look.
Yeah.
Okay. Any album that has a trumpet solo.
Oh yeah.
A harmonica solo.
I wanted to talk about the harmonica.
I was like, hey, the harmonica solo.
It's insane. Because that song, I read something where it's like, is Start Today the first breakdown in hardcore?
Is
like
it?
Someone was just posing that question on like Reddit or something.
It should be, but
like if it was the first breakdown, like tough guy breakdown in hardcore, it also has a fucking harmonica.
I mean, and they still like, they do it live. That's harmonica
so cool.
Still happens.
It's so
the
cool.
Trumpets still happen
live. I love that they get the trumpets.
And then there's also the whistle solo in another song.
Which song is that?
The whistle one, I'm like down in, I think it's called Competition.
Okay, yeah, nice.
So there's like a full mosh bit and you're like, I'm feeling it. And then there's a whistle solo.
I love them. I love them, dude. They're so much fun.
Those parts in the album is what's really like, really gets me. And then, you know, you've got one of the second last track, which is sitting around
cover
at home.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it's such a vibe. It's just a vibe. I want to do like,
it feels like a joke, but it's like, oh, it's a Buzzcocks cover. Yeah. This is like old school.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit.
And I feel like I want to just do like air handlebars to it.
Like, it's so good. Yeah,
you know
what
I mean? It's
and it shows how good a singer he is.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot on that album, but I think, it would be remiss to exclude the trumpets, the harmonica and the whistles.
What's your favorite song?
I reckon it's got to be Start Today.
Start Today is really good.
Start Today, I think, is probably I'm like, that's the one I have the most notes on. I like Things We Say, and I also like
Things We Say is interesting. The lyrics are very interesting because it's like, oh, it's just joking, but it hurt you. But like, also, shouldn't we be allowed to joke? But also, blah blah blah. Yeah. It's like real middle.
You could see it either way. You could see it as like, oh, should it just we be allowed to kind of make some bad jokes at the expense of others, or should we not be doing it? It makes you question it.
Yeah.
And then I think the final track, which is just Gorilla Biscuits,
it's fun. Yeah.
Because it's so much fun. It's a big goof off, and you get to have the final little, like, you can sing it along.
It sums up the whole thing. It sums up the whole fucking thing. It's so good. And it's kind of a joke, as I like that it's like a bit of a...
It's like a crew vibe.
A bit of a crew vibe, but like in a really kind of tongue-in-cheek way. Because like you listen to like Suicidal Tendencies and it's like ST Army, blah, 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 blah. And then like none of the lyrics fucking mean anything.
Yeah.
It's just like talking... It's just like almost like braggadocio, like... rap, just be like, I'm the best. I'm like, how many times can you say it, dude? Like what are you talking about?
Probably a lot.
And then then it's like, GB, here to fucking it's just like, it's like very funny as a response to all that stuff. I think my favorite song's Forgotten.
I was like, what have I got for notes? Oh yeah. It reminds me, there's a part in it, I wrote a note.
Yeah.
Have you seen the movie Empire Records?
Yes.
You know Mark when he's like doing his little scream in the middle of, he's got a record on and he just screams. There's a vocal pop in Forgotten that sounds like that. And that's, I was like, funny. That's a nice.
I don't know, like I forgot, like when I think I just didn't realize it when I first got into it, how good they were at their fucking instruments.
Yeah.
Because then I put it on like, this week to listen to it. And I'm just like, oh shit, this is like crazy.
Yeah.
This is like crazy musicianship.
The bass in every song is going. Yeah.
But that's what I love about Forgotten, because Forgotten's got this guitar lead that's just like, and then it goes into that. Do you remember, again, in this sort of like era we're talking about, like late 2000s, early 2010s, the melodic hardcore boom?
Yes.
Like Sinking Ships, Dead Swans, all those bands that were just like Killing the Dream.
Uh-huh.
Like all these bands that were just like melodic hardcore. It started with Forgotten. You think
that's
dude?
Where it all like, came from?
Yeah, because those octave chords, like everything, like, you could see how it, like there's just so many splinters.
People
from
this,
can
like, just take
emo,
it from tough guy hardcore. Take something from all of it.
It's amazing.
Yeah. But that's kind of it.
Yeah. I think we covered it. I think we did a good one.
Covered a lot.
So thank you so much.
Thank you.
I think one thing I do want to reiterate though is like, you mentioned you toured Gorilla Biscuits.
Yes, in 2008.
But you also toured Rival Schools.
Yes.
So you've that's the connection that I kind of wanted to key into. Like you've been involved, at least on a business level, with Walter a few times.
A few times. Yeah.
Did you tour Quicksand ever?
I can't recall, but I don't think we toured Quicksand, but to be honest, like these days I feel like I've got a Swiss cheese memory.
There were
so many artists that were touring during the time that I worked there that I don't know. And then also sometimes you would help other, you know, touring companies bring out some of the artists too.
One thing I just thought of, not to like, we could talk all day. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay.
I remember seeing that Rival Schools tour because I loved Rival Schools. I'm just like, I love that fucking album. And they toured as a three piece.
Yes.
And in the middle of their set, they had this big just jam session, like improvised jam, like almost like reggae jam. And I remember a couple of friends being like, oh, they should just play the fucking songs. I just want to hear the songs. I'm like, I could put my headphones on and hear the songs. This is amazing.
Yeah.
This is what Walter does. This is what makes him great.
Yeah.
He's an amazing musician. Fucking appreciate this shit.
You're not going to get this on a CD.
I love the improv element that they brought. And it was totally unexpected as well for a band like that just to come out and just like do weird shit like that.
Yeah.
Because that album is such a solid rock record. And then they're like...
Because I'm like, they've come out a few times. Is this the time that they...
Did Rival Schools come out a few times?
Yeah, so I toured them...
This would have been the first time.
We toured them, and Toy Boats was the support.
Yeah, that would have been the first time. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Yeah, I did that.
Awesome. Thanks. Cool. Well, thanks so much, Danny. Let's wrap it there. Do you have anything to promote?
No. Absolutely not. Nothing to promote at all.
Yeah, okay, cool. So
I think a band that people should support is Cherish.
Yeah. All right, I'll check them out.
Yeah, nice. Trans fronted, straight edge hardcore band.
Okay, nice.
On topic.
Oh, you know what? I think I have heard of Cherish.
Yeah.
I'll check them out. Yeah, nice.
They're great.
Sick. Awesome. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Oh, this is 1989. We've done the 80s. I'm putting up a playlist on Spotify just of like, just select songs from each of the records that we covered over the last 9 episodes. So if you're listening to the podcast and you just want a little playlist, hardcore playlist to put on, that's up on Spotify. I'll post about it on Instagram. Follow Dead Ramones on Instagram. Follow me at ryan.d.sim. Do you want people to follow you on?
Nah, don't worry about
I've got comedy shows to promote. I need followers.
Yeah, follow you.
Yeah. I also run a weekly comedy show called Rat Club with a K. So come to Rat Club. It's at Mosh Pit Bar, South King in Sydney. I think that's everything.
Yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks,
Thank
Danny.
Thank you.